I wanted to share with you some words from the scripture, though. These are the continuation of the story of the Christmas story from Matthew 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in the territory of Judea during the rule of King Herod, Magi came from the east to Jerusalem. They asked, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We've seen his star in the east and we've come to honor him." When King Herod heard this, he was troubled, and everyone in Jerusalem was troubled with him. He gathered all of the chief priests and legal experts and asked them where the Christ was to be born. And they said, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what the prophet wrote. You, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, because from you will come one who governs, who will shepherd my people Israel." And then Herod secretly called for the Magi and found out from them the time when the star had first appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you found him, report to me so that I too may go and honor him." When they heard the king, they went and looked the star that had been in the east. I can't figure out how, if they're coming from the east and the star is in the east, that makes any sense, but that's what it says. That had been in the east went ahead of them until it stood over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with Mary. Joseph must have been out working, his mother. Falling to their knees, they honored him. They opened their treasure chests and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And because they'd been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they went back to their own country by another road. Today is the Sunday that is closest to Epiphany. Now, that's kind of a strange word, epiphany. Do you know what it means? It means a discovery or an aha moment. Another word that can be used is revelation. It's a revelation. It's something that's covered up that becomes uncovered. You want to see what that looks like? Covered up becomes uncovered. Yes, I stole our willow tree, Mary and Joseph. So if you want to know where they are, now you know. That's an epiphany. It's a discovery. The wise men were following a star. It got them as far as Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, they stopped to ask for directions. They went to King Herod, and they asked King Herod a really good question. They asked him, "Where is Jesus?" Isn't that a good question? If we are followers of Jesus, then doesn't it follow that we ought to know where Jesus is? So we ought to be asking the question, where is Jesus? Maybe you've been fighting one of those viruses in the last couple of weeks that's going around. Have you had one of those? One of them that takes you from feeling okay to feeling really lousy, from feeling like you're going to die to wishing that you were going to die? Have you ever had that feeling? You know that Jesus came and healed people, and have you found yourself asking the question, Jesus, where are you? Maybe you've been having problems at work. We've gotten to the end of the year here now, and for a lot of jobs, that means there's a lot of extra work to be done at the end of the year, which means extra stress. You know that Jesus came as the Prince of Peace, and so have you been asking yourself that question? Jesus, where are you? Or do you know somebody that's going through a difficult time, and maybe you're trying to reach out and be there for them, but they're just not answering your phone calls. They're not finding the time in their schedule to respond to your requests. They don't return your calls. They always seem to have other things going on. You know that Jesus helped those in need, and so have you found yourself asking, Jesus, where are you? I thought we'd take a look at the Magi and their search for Jesus in hopes that maybe we might learn something that'll help us in our search. I'd like to ask specifically the questions, what do we know about the Magi? What do they teach us about the heart of God? What do they teach us about worship? And what do they teach us about faithful living? First, what do we know about the Magi? What do we know about these people? As I thought about it, I realized that most of what I know about the wise men comes from not the Bible, but where? Can you guess? A song that we sing about them. We three, you know that song? So we know how many of them there are, right? Doesn't actually say in the Bible, but we're all pretty sure that there's three of them. Why? Because that's what the song says. We know what they did for a living, right? They were we three kings. Why? Doesn't actually say that in the Bible, but that's what the song says. We three kings. And where did they come from? The Orient, right? Never mind that the Orient was an entire continent away, and people probably wouldn't have traveled that far. But we know they're from the Orient because that's what the song says. So, except for them not being three of them, and except for them not really being kings, and except them for them not really coming to the Orient, it's a great song. What can we learn from the Magi? Here's what we're actually told in the Bible. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men came from the east to Jerusalem. Now, I got out a map, and I found Jerusalem, and then I looked east. And you know what's directly east of Jerusalem? The Dead Sea. It's a really barren, desolate area. So that's probably not where they're coming from. But if you kind of go north and east, you go through Saudi Arabia, and then you go through Iran, and then you go through Iraq, and you get to what was a major trade route in that area. You know the city that was in those days in Iraq called Babylon? These days it's Baghdad. The area in those days was called Persia. That's probably the area that they came from. The word that what we translate as magi that it appears from in Greek is actually magoi, M-A-G-O-I. It's the same word that we get the word magician from. In Israel, there were 12 tribes of Judah. One of them was the tribe of Levi, and their job was to run the temple, so they did temple kinds of things. In Babylon, there was a group of people like that. They were kind of consultants to the kings. They were well-versed in the natural sciences. They knew something about medicine. Remember, there weren't doctors in those days. They knew about astronomy and astrology and philosophy and God. These were probably those kinds of people who were a combination of counselor, spiritual advisor, and sometimes even people that were thought to have magical powers. Got them as far as Jerusalem. If that's where they were from, then the trip to Jerusalem would have been about 900 miles and probably would have taken about a year. Do we have any clues that that's actually for real? Here's some that I'd suggest in the Bible. One is, when the wise men arrive there, they don't find Jesus in a manger anymore. Remember where he is? He's in a house. And he's not described as a baby anymore. You remember the word that's used to describe him? Now he's a child. King Herod, when he gets worried about another king who's born, king of the Jews, he kills all of the children under the age of two. So that tells us we're probably a year or 2 years from Jesus' actual birth. But why is that important? Why would it be important to God to include magi in this story of Jesus' birth? Here's what I'd like to suggest. What the magi have to teach us is that God has a heart for all different kinds of people. One of the things that tends to happen when we discover something is we tend to draw ourselves into a circle, especially in religious circles. And we tend to think we're pretty special because of what we're able to discover. The problem with that is it tends to draw other people out of the circle. For example, this Christmas I discovered charcoal-covered marshmallows. Caramel-covered marshmallows. Caramel-covered marshmallows. First time I've ever discovered caramel-covered marshmallows. And it's brilliant. Why did anybody not do this before? Put caramel and marshmallows together? That way you get all the sugar of a chocolate high without all of the caffeine. You can eat it late at night. I got to thinking, wow, I must be pretty smart. God must really like me that I found caramel-colored marshmallows. Now, if I feel that good about caramel-covered marshmallows, can you imagine how good Mary and Joseph must have felt about being the parents of the Messiah? That God thought highly enough of them that he trusted them with bringing up his only son? Can you imagine how special the innkeeper must have felt? I'm now in the inn where Jesus was born. From now on, I'll be able to have a sign that says, Jesus slept here. People will want to flock here, right? The problem is if we think we're that special, we tend to draw a circle around ourselves, and then we tend to draw other people out of that circle. And that's why I think God, part of the reason anyway, chose to include the Magi. He chose the Magi in this story to show us that God has a heart for all people, even people from a different culture, probably with a different color skin, spoke a different language, maybe even with a lot of different beliefs, to remind us that he has a heart for everyone. Years ago, there used to be an Apple commercial that went like this. It went, "Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in square holes, the ones who see things differently. They are not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can praise them, disagree with them, quote them, disbelieve them, glorify them, or vilify them. But about the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things." It's the reason when the protests have been going on recently, I try to pay attention to what the people that I don't agree with say. Not because I want my mind changed, and not because I think that they're necessarily all right, but because I think God often speaks through people that we disagree with. And so there might be something for us to have heard. When God went to Abraham, he said to Abraham, "I will make of you a great nation." Remember that? "And through you, I will bless not only your family, but who else? All the families of the earth." There's a story about a guy named Cornelius in the book of Acts, chapter 10. Cornelius is from what is known as the Roman or the Italian regiment. He's described as a devout person who feared God, gave generously to those in need, and prayed to God regularly. One day at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, God showed up in the person of an angel, gives to him a vision. He says, "I want you to go and find a guy by the name of Peter and share this vision with him." And little did Cornelius know that about that same time, the apostle Peter was also having a vision. He went up on the roof of his house, and God gives him this vision. In the vision, there are all different kinds of animals on a cloth. I imagine it kind of like a picnic table coming out of heaven. And Peter believes that the message that he's receiving from God is they had strict rules about what they were supposed to eat and not eat. That what God was trying to tell them is that those rules were changing, and now they could change the things that they were to be eating. And then Cornelius shows up and he confirms this vision, but he says even more. He says, "This isn't just a vision about what you're allowed to eat." He says, "This is also a vision about people, that we're not supposed to exclude people from God's people anymore." And I'm paraphrasing here, but this is the conversation that happens between Peter and Cornelius. He says, "This is freaking me out. It looks to me like if what you're saying is true, then the same spirit that God is giving us, God's giving other people as well. It's like God doesn't play favorites." The actual words in the book of Acts are these: "God shows no partiality. But in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him. Such is the heart of God." What Jesus was, Jesus still is. What Jesus did, he still does. What God loved, he still loves. The coming of the Magi, I think, is a reminder that God has a heart for all people. People that don't know Christ, nobody loves them more than God does. And the Magi are a reminder of the lengths that God will go to communicate his good news with people who are seeking him. All right, what does it have to teach us about worship? Remember what the Magi did when they found Mary and the child? They saw the star had stopped, and they were overwhelmed with joy. When they saw the child with Mary, his mother, they knelt down and they paid him homage. Doesn't that sound like a pretty good description of what worship is all about? Being overwhelmed with joy, kneeling down, paying God homage. To be people who are seeking, who are hungry, looking for Christ. And when we find what we're looking for, Jesus said, "Seek and ye shall find, knock and the door shall be opened, ask and it shall be given." And then bring to Jesus our gift of joyful hearts. This year I had a pretty good Christmas because I knew what I was looking for. I was looking for a day to sleep in late, spend some time with family, not have to worry about too much in the day, and not have a whole lot go wrong in the course of the day. I ended up joyful at the end of the day. You know why? Because I had gotten what I asked for. Got a chance to sleep in, got a chance to spend some time with family, not have to worry too much, and not have a whole lot of things go horribly wrong. In the 13th century, there was a guy by the name of Father Angelico who wrote, "The gloom of this world is but a shadow behind it, yet within reach is joy. There is radiance and glory in the darkness, but could we but see? And to see, we have only to look. I beseech you to look. Life is so generous a giver. Welcome it, grasp it, and you touch the angel's hand that brings it to you. Everything we call a trial, a sorrow, or duty, the angel's hand is there, the gift is there, and the wonder of an overshadowing presence. Our joys, too, be not content with them as joys. They, too, conceal diviner gifts. So lastly, what does this show us about the way, about faithful living? Mostly, I think what the wise men teach us is that when they get to Bethlehem, this is the other thing we know about the wise men. When they get to Bethlehem, they find Mary and the baby Jesus. And what do? Do you remember? They open their treasure chests and they give gifts of gold. Now, gold's not cheap, which means you wouldn't give it to just anybody. You'd only give it to somebody that was important, like a king. So this is their way of honoring him. Gold, frankincense, which was a kind of incense. The idea was that smoke ascends to God, and that has something to teach us about the way that we can lift our spirits to God. And so the wise men are probably teaching us something about Jesus, showing us the way to God. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh was made from the sap of the dindin tree. It was thought to have healing powers, but it was also something that was used in embalming, probably symbolic of Jesus's destiny as the Son of Man to suffer and die on the cross. So what difference does this make to us? I think it teaches us that God changes our heart, our will, overwhelms us with joy, and in our worship, our faith is not incomplete until our lives are characterized by extravagant generosity. And haven't you find that to be true? Don't you find the times that you feel the closest to Christ are when you're being generous to others? Some of you took gifts to give to St. Paul's to help kids that otherwise might not have been able to celebrate much of a Christmas. Didn't that make you feel a little bit closer to Christ? When people were opening their gifts on Christmas morning, I know it's nice to receive the gift that you've really wanted, but don't you really feel more Christ-like when you watch somebody open a gift that you've spent a lot of time trying to get just the perfect thing? What can we learn from the extravagance of the Magi? We tend to paint ourselves in the middle of our own circles, and God is constantly going outside of our circles because that's where the heart of God is. So where is Jesus? He's where people who are very different are all getting together. Their response was to fall on their knees, overwhelmed with joy. Unless you're willing to search, sometimes at great cost, it's not likely that you will find. Where is Jesus? Jesus is where people who are worshiping and being overwhelmed with joy. And lastly, faithful living is characterized by extravagant generosity. Where is Jesus? Jesus is where lives are being changed, often by being shown through extravagant acts of generosity.